committee meeting for Monday, May 10th, 2021. And we have Kate, our council president, sitting in for Zaki Don, who is not able to be here tonight. And also welcome Cynthia and staff members and anyone else coming joining this meeting. The first item on the agenda is the disposition of the former Fire Station 52 site, and it looks like Rachel is the one who is going to tee this up for us.
Good evening, council members. For the record, Rachel Bianchi, Deputy City Administrator. I want to thank you for having us here tonight to talk about the options for disposition of Fire Station 52. As you know, we opened up the old Fire Station 52. As you know, we opened up the new fire station earlier this year. Fire Station 52, located on the City Hall campus, is now our headquarters station. And as such, with fire all moved out of the old fire station on top of Tukwila Hill, it's time for us to talk about how you want the disposition you want for the property. So, you can see in the memo starting on page one of your packet, basically we've laid out four different alternatives to consider. Before we get into those alternatives, I do want to just touch briefly. We did commission a property conditions report for the building just so that we would have some idea as to kind of the state of the property, right? It was built in 1971. The property condition report identifies a little over $180,000 of needed repairs over the next 12 years, of which about 130 of that is recommended to be completed in the next 5 years. And all of those details are included in the property conditions report, which are attached to the memo. Another just piece of information for council to have in mind as we consider the best next steps for this property is the fact that it has been a working fire station for quite a number of years. And, you know, we know a lot more about contamination and other issues associated with the fire service than we did back in 1971 when that building was completed. And that is one of the reasons, actually, that we did go ahead and look to construct new state-of-the-art fire stations is because of the contamination issues. So there are some unknown issues about what the, you know, 50 years of diesel exhaust in that building could potentially be. So two kind of important points of information that you have as we look to determine the next steps for the building. So we have identified four different alternatives for the council to consider. The first one is that the city retains the existing building and repurpose it for community use. Obviously, this would allow us another community space that could be used for a variety of events. It would require upfront capital outlay, both to initiate needed repairs, but then certainly you would need to do some remodeling and updating for whatever use you determine for community use. The alternative would also require staff time to program the building as well as ongoing maintenance. So, and you all know the location and the limitation about parking. I'm sure it's not a surprise to you that there could be limitations for events due to parking issues. The second alternative would be for the city to either sell or lease to a nonprofit or community group. This could look a variety of different ways, so I'm not going to go into the weeds on different things, but things for you to consider were you to sell it. It could be sold sort of on an as-is basis, requiring no additional investment. A lease scenario would likely require capital outlay for needed repairs. Did want you to know that we have been approached by a community member sort of wondering about using the facility for an art space. We've not, except for to, you know, thank the community member and tell them that we were going to be going through a process, we've not engaged with them further to better understand what they were looking at or interested in. Any sale or lease process would need to go through a public process. Again, the inadequate parking issues, you know, would flow to this alternative. And then we'd have to do a boundary line adjustment just because the former fire station is on the same lot as the park and former City Hall building. Alternative three is for the city to sell the building to a private entity. This would also require a boundary lot adjustment. We have been approached by a broker representing an individual interested in purchasing the old fire station. But this would also require a public process, and I would anticipate there would be interest from other parties besides that one broker. And then lastly, alternative four, and this is the alternative that the administration is recommending, is that the city turn it into a park. It would cost some upfront funds to demolish the existing building, and then obviously to turn it into either a passive or active park, but it would make the site available to the community and then also preserve future options potentially. So we're here to sort of get a temperature, see what you think. If there's more information that you want prior to going to the full council, we'd be happy to bring that back to you. If you have a recommendation that you want to move forward, we can go to the next COW, sort of looking for the discussion and leadership from the committee, and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
All right. Questions from my fellow committee members. I'll start with Cynthia this time. Cynthia, questions? Comments?
Yeah. I mean, general comments are, it seems like the alternative to sell it to a private entity wouldn't work because of where it's placed, you know, right by that small park. I know it's not the best park we have in the city, but it is a park nonetheless, as well as the historical society. And so it would be a little weird. I mean, it's just weird to imagine like a private development or a housing, you know, someone's house or even like a couple houses in that space. It just seems like such a weird space. So in terms of the alternative to sell it privately, like that one, doesn't really seem like fitting. The ones that I'm really thinking about are the two alternatives. One, which is to lease it or sell it to a community partner, or the demolish and turn into a park. The question that I have about the first one, which is to, you know, to work with a community partner, is do we know anything about, like, you know, you mentioned that the diesel emissions, like, is it actually safe? Because I know the report was limited in what it could actually do. It was really just looking at exterior and other things that could be seen, but there are still, I imagine there's still things that may be unseen, like, I don't know, air quality, if it was turned into an art space, could people be in the space that the fire engines were in, and would that be safe? And is the cost, is that a cost that was taken into consideration in that $180,000 that was estimated? No.
No, that $180,000, that is nothing to do with any, you know, potential contamination issue. And we, you know, we purposely stopped at this initial property conditions report just because we wanted to get some idea from the council, right? You may want us to go back and do more investigation, but so that $181,000 does not include anything we would need to do in terms of, you know, if there's, you know, in talking to Jeff Sandahl, who did the property conditions report, basically he was, if you have insulation in there, right, you would have to pull all of the insulation out at a minimum, right, and replace it. And I would assume that there would be other things as well that we would need to do. I would also add, so we would need to do obviously the health and safety issues, right, but then there would most certainly be additional remodeling that you would need to do, you know, in order to bring that up to a building that could be used for such a space. And I don't have the total number there for you at this point.
What would it cost to demolish a building of that size?
So I don't have I don't have an engineer's estimate for you, council member, but I would say it would be in the about $100,000 range.
Okay. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, this might be another question I had was, are we under a time crunch to make this decision?
So I would say no. However, I would also say that the former fire station in Allentown is something for us to all keep in mind. That building has sat there for many years, and I would be concerned about an unused building sitting in that prominent spot for really any significant period of time. We all know that when buildings are uninhabited, they tend to go down faster. There are issues throughout the city of buildings that are not inhabited being used for other purposes. We have time, but I would just be concerned about letting it linger for any significant period of time.
All right. Thanks, Rachel. That's all my questions for now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Kate, questions and comments?
So I would never put myself before the people that live in that neighborhood. So I think the most important thing to put before I weigh in on any of this is to say, I really think we need to talk to this neighborhood, just as we would talk to people up by PIS or down in Allentown or up in Ryan Way to decide what we do with this facility. So that's my foremost statement tonight. The second thing I have to say is, are you implying that the diesel exhaust piece has put our firefighters in danger for years?
I'm saying that we were always very clear that firefighter health and safety was one of the reasons why we needed to move into new facilities. That's what we've been talking about throughout the PFP process.
Can we get measurements?
Even prior to the bond.
Can we get measurements on what the endangerment has been and for how many years to our firefighters due to this problem?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm not an environmental specialist, so
I don't know today, but we're making a claim there's a problem, and I'd like to know the degree of the problem. Is it 1% or 100%? Did people sleep there in this facility the last 20 years and they were in danger based on diesel exhaust? I think we need to put some literal, accurate data to this claim.
So I'd be happy to work with the fire chief, who would certainly have much more information than I would about that.
I think that would be much appreciated by the council with this decision. And then the demolition question was covered already. Thank you. Councilmember Dallas Johnson, the estimate you kind of threw out, not knowing, order of magnitude is $100,000 based on what?
Based on the demolitions that we've done associated with the public safety plan project.
Okay, could you name like a project that would equate to this?
So my recollection is the lifestyle landscape was a little over $65,000 to demolish, and that was a bit of a smaller footprint than this. So I'm happy to get an engineer's estimate to provide you with further information, but for the purposes of this discussion, I think that's a defensible ROM with a swing both ways.
I get it. Without spending a lot of money, it seems like the council needs to make informed decisions, and we need to know what the cost will be with whatever experts you can get to make that. Or you can at least benchmark based on this and that. We conclude it would be this. In this year, because I don't know what the demolition costs were in former years, right? So time value of money factored in, it would be nice if somebody in our planning department could help us figure that out or whatever. We have a lot of good engineers there. My utmost support is towards alternative one for community use. It butts up to a park and to our historical society building, which is, I don't know if it's actually a national historical site, but it is the place where we once had a city hall. It's where we once had a school. It has a lot of meaning to the neighborhood there. And I would think that we would be able to somehow quantify the value of that to us. You mentioned that you were reached out to by a person who's interested in creative arts. I'm just going to recapitulate inappropriately here. I don't want to know the name of that person, but I do want to know if that person's affiliated with any of our arts commissions or anyone else that we refer to, our art resident.
Anyone else we refer to? On the arts commission.
Okay. So is this something, and I'm just going to look at our committee president and say that might be well to go through the arts commission and just have them flesh this out a little more. I'd love to hear more voices on the matter. Not a single voice, but there's nothing wrong with understanding what the idea really means and if there are other people in the art community that feel the same way. I'm not real excited about selling the property. I think I've talked to enough people up on Fixville Hill that are not excited about a development there. So if the city staff has alternative information, again, to inform the council, I'd really be interested in that. So that would be private embassy. Sales or leases to a nonprofit. When you have that out there for me, it's an option. Do you have a nonprofit in mind? Is there someone?
No, Council President. Anything like that would have to go through a public process, so you would have to do a call and have folks compete. So, again, we were approached by one individual representing an idea, but anything would have to be a public process, and that
right.
if should the full council determine to go that route.
Okay, so my leniency right now is between alternative one and alternative four, because there's not enough information for me to you know, articulate a decision on two and three. But before any of that happens, it seems like that we'd be doing a survey or a town hall or a council, you know, town hall with the citizens up on Old Hill and say, you know what? We're into the third chapter of this use of this building. What are your imaginations saying? What do you want? What do you want us to do and what do you want us not to do? Our council, which is seven people, and two on this committee actually live there, but the council in its entirety does not. I feel no different than I would if we were talking to Allentown, or, you know, Cascade View, or over in McMicken Heights. How do the people who live there feel about what is going to happen in with the legacy of this building? And they may come up with ideas. I've learned through my project management career that the ideas are much better when you include a lot of people. So that's my input. Thanks.
Thank you, Kate. So I agree with both my fellow council members here. I think that that alternatives two and three should be taken off the table for various reasons. I don't know why we would sell the property, and both alternative two and three have that. So the question really is, if we're going to retain the space, how does that look? And the idea of having a town forum is probably the way to go. The question is when. I would think that we'd take it to the full council and then we would have the some sort of community forum. I think that's a great idea. And let them talk about what they see. I do know, because that is the neighborhood I live in, that people are very interested in retaining that as a public space. So we can just, I don't want to make that assumption, but I think we'll find that that bears out as we talk to people. So if it was me right now saying, Kathy, what do you think you should do with it? I would say, let's go with four, demolish the building, and then maybe after, you know, well, of course we'll talk to the public first, but what if we built a different building that was more suitable for flexibility for the public space? That's instead of trying to repurpose the fire department, which seems like kind of a cool idea, but we might be able to get something better. And knowing my kids, when they were preschoolers and going to that park, and the only thing that they had to do was climb on the cougar, right? You know, it's like we could have the park part be a little bigger and give them something else to do up there besides chase them around the circle and climb on the cougar. And so those are all things that we could talk about. I'm not going to say keep the building or not keep the building. I'm kind of thinking probably not keep the building. The other thing about that is that we could turn it into a passive park while we figure it out and get the money. It just gives us more flexibility. And as far as the measurements about the endangerments, maybe that can get rolled into all this fire station stuff that's happening in a different committee rather than, you know, than have that be part of here. That would probably be a better place for that. So the question for our committee, first I'll ask, are any other comments before I talk about maybe next steps? Either of you?
Go ahead and talk about next steps. It seems like we're all sort of gelling on this.
I suggest to my fellow council members that we move this into the rig, to a COW and talk about it and give our recommendation of having a public process, a public town hall. I just see a lot of really positive things and positive energy with that. And we can talk about the space because I know that there have been people that have envisioned doing some creative things with that space. But I'm thinking we wouldn't be able to make that space for a while. Why not demolish the building and then redesign something that really might be really great and flexible for the space? And it could be a passive park. We've got to add a few more things for the kids in between. So those are things. Kate, were you waving your hand? You wanted to say something?
I was. Before we touch a stick on that building, I think we need to understand financially what's the actual cost of demolition. What is the actual cost of refurbishing this facility without the diesel pollution that's there? Literally a month ago, we had firefighters living there 24 hours a day. So I have to understand the depth of this problem. Is it a paint job? You know, is it just a coat of paint kills and we don't have a problem? Because literally we have people eating, sleeping, and staying there on 24 and 48-hour watches. So I'm concerned that we're making this into a seismological problem that we used to have. And there might be some really good bones on this thing, and I just don't want to have it demolished before we actually have an informed decision to make structurally and financially. The other thing is I totally support the community inn concept. I just don't want to this could be a meeting place for people. This could be an arts and crafts place for people. This could be a wood shop for people. I have no idea what it's going to turn into, but the space, I don't know if all of you have been in it. I've been in it. I know maybe Kathy has. I don't know if Cynthia has. I think it's worth a little walkthrough, and that might be more important for this committee. I won't be part of that because I'm just filling in for Zach. But I think you should do a walkthrough, and I think you should have actual dollar amounts to make these decisions, and I'm happy to have it come to COW, but they're going to ask the same question. Well, you know, what are we talking about here? What's the cost to do this or that? I just don't see this being a housing development, right? I don't see it becoming an apartment building. You know, I don't even know what the zoning is for that. I do know that we need to protect that historical society. And if it I don't want it to turn into a big parking lot for the Historical Society. I think it should be something really useful. When I look around Old Hill, there's a lot of places for kids who attend Tuck Elementary besides on that school ground to play. And maybe this is going to be the right place for them to play. And so before we tear it apart, let's find out what can be recovered without destroying it. Because repurposing buildings really has a lot of plus and minuses, but plus is more than minuses in communities like this when it's in a residential neighborhood. I'd just love to see us be very certain about the options.
I agree that having a more, putting in the memo what the cost would be for demolition just based on other demolition projects that we've done, just an estimate seems like a good idea. The health and safety concerns of firefighters who are there, that seems like a good question for Chief Whitworth, just to sort of comment on that piece. I like this idea of a walkthrough. I actually wanted to walk down there earlier today just to get grounded in our discussion. I didn't have a chance to go on a walk, but if it's possible to do a walkthrough, maybe I've been to the other stations, but I hadn't walked through that one. I don't remember why I didn't go to that one, but and I really like the idea of having, you know, us as council going out to the community and having a discussion with that neighborhood, the folks that it's my neighborhood, and Kathy's neighborhood, just to see what folks are thinking in terms of what they'd like to see. But I think the question really is demolish or not demolish. Do we want to keep the structure or not? So I'm comfortable with where we are with this. Or it seems like we're
so Councilmember, I will be in Tukwila both tomorrow and Friday. If you had time, I'd be happy to walk you through the station.
Okay. Okay. I'll email you. I'm in Tukwila.
Okay.
Hey, you have some more. Do you have another comment?
I would love that you pick Friday because I'm supposed to be on a walk at someplace else on Wednesday, and I'd really like to be included in this if possible. There was a reference made to the station that's down in Allentown that's dormant, which was not languishing for decades. It actually was used for our police department to put vehicles that were considered evidence for crimes right until we built the Justice Center. How far back, if you shake your hand, Rachel?
We've been leasing space to, I'll have to get you that information, but we've been leasing space to house those vehicles since I've been here for 7 years. We just recently moved out of that lease space and into the old 51.
Okay, but, you might be right, because it was 10 years ago that I was given the tour. So you're saying 7 years ago we emptied that building completely?
At least.
Okay.
It's been used off and on. Parks has used it for storage for things and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's fallen apart.
City has used it for storage. So I would think that's a much more urgent situation than the fire department on Old Hill. That's my total comment. Thanks.
Okay. So the question now is where to move on. So we've talked about getting a walkthrough the building. We've talked about having a community hall, getting a ballpark estimate of demolishing. And so the question again is, do you want to keep this in committee or are we ready to bring it to the committee of the whole? I think we're ready to bring it to the committee of the whole with recommendations that I need to make sure you would both agree on. And that would be like, we're looking at 1 and 4. And we don't think that selling a property is what to do. And then we can say, and here's our ideas moving forward. And that was to get the estimate of the demolishment and make sure we've got that before we start having a town hall meeting. So when we talk to people, we can say, yeah, and so this is going to cost this much or this much. And what do you want to do? But I think we're ready to move it out, of committee and put it into COW and, so that's my first question. Are we ready? Yes? Kate?
With constraints, if we get the information on demolition, if we get the information on value of the property itself, if we get information on how the city would go about reaching out to Tukwila Hill residents, then I think it's ready to go before the council. I think we'll be maybe relieved to hear that we recommend 2 out of 4, but they're going to turn right around and say, this goes back to committee until you have the other stuff sessed out, I'm thinking. Am I crazy?
No, I think that makes sense. We're all on the same page that we want that information. And so we could either have it after the rest of the whole council confirms our choice 1 and 4, or we could come with it. I have the feeling that, we're going to be looking at those. And so, I don't know. So you've got Kate, Cynthia, what do you think about having that information go along with the COW, the information being a more firm demolition cost and maybe an idea of community outreach, or we could discuss that during this meeting. You could bring those to us, Rachel? Okay.
Absolutely, Council Members.
One question, this sounds good. One question that I have is, if we were to do a community type thing, would it be like council initiated because we're making a decision, or is it the city is initiating it?
I would suggest it be staff, right?
Okay.
You all participate in things like that, but it goes in to help inform your decision. But I would personally suggest it be staff led, but look for
okay.
you all for guidance in that.
I just didn't know. I'm fine with whatever works. Sounds good.
Okay, so do you have direction then for, we're going to move it to the COW, including with the new information included, and then we'll have the discussion there. And I want to confirm that 1 and 4 are the ones we're moving forward, or I know, Kate, that you were leaning more towards 1, but you said maybe also 4, but
so I'm good with 1 and 4. It's really important that there's an ability for the council to make an informed decision, otherwise they're going to turn it right back to this committee. So if we're saying we're going to give them facts and data on the value of the property, the cost, not like a ballpark, the cost of demolition, we should be able to get that pretty easily. And without going to bid, it should be pretty, we have engineers that work at City of Tukwila. We should be able to get a real good estimate, because that's what they do when they go out to bid anyway. And then we should have I'm very concerned that this is being compared to Allentown's fire department, the one that's dormant, because it's not the same situation, and it's been dormant for years, and its purpose of use has been different for many, many times. And if people are concerned that someone's going to take over this fire department, as in squatters, I would argue this is a completely different neighborhood. That's never going to happen.
So are we ready to move on to the next thing? We've got our marching orders, and we can move on to the next item.
Thank you.
Okay, with you.
I had one just comment. To Kate's point about the Allentown Fire Department, because I haven't been here, if I could just get like a small summary of like, this is where it's at, if we move forward going to talk about, 52 and we don't know where we're at with the other one, I fear the folks from Allentown will feel like you guys care more about what's happening in Tukwila Hill than what's happening in our community. And it would be good, at least for me, and maybe because Kate brought it up, it's a good point, to just know, like, so we could say, well, this is the status of what's going on there. It's a different situation. And I probably just repeated everything Kate said, but I thought it was a good idea.
No,
you'd be happy to get a memo out to you all with some thoughts. That station has been on our mind, and honestly, if there was council interest in demolishing 52 at the end of the day, we would probably suggest that you piggyback a contract to demolish the other building too. It's complicated by the sewer issue. And without getting into too much detail, in order for us to sell that property that I'm aware of, we either have to tear down the building or put in a sewer stub. So we'll get you more information on that, but just know we were somewhat thinking alike on that. So thank you.
So sewer stub and demolition in Allentown, yes?
One or the other in order to sell that fire station in Allentown, correct?
Just the Allentown, that's what you were just describing, not the Tukwila Hill. And again, gee, they're just a little hypersensitive right now. Maybe we should talk to the Allentown people about what we do with that property as well.
All right. So we can bring all these things to the COW and discuss it there. And so we're going to be moving forward this to the COW. And so let's go on to business agenda item B, marijuana tax revenue. And that is going to be Laura.
Thank you, council members. Have my voice volume. Is it okay? All right. So you may recall that a couple of council meetings ago, council member Delastrinos Johnson asked the council if there was interest in having staff look into revenue potential if the two marijuana retail licenses allotted to Tukwila were active business with possibly expanded zoning in the city, and she did get agreement. So the finance committee in 2019 looked at this exact question, and I just updated the memo I wrote back then, and it's in your packet, and I'll quickly walk you through it. And a quick history refresher, Initiative 502 passed in 2012. The subsequent rulemaking process by the Liquor and Cannabis Board determined that the city of Tukwila could have up to 2 retailers. That's totally independent of whatever the city's decision-making about zoning was. And in September 2013, the council passed an ordinance that determined marijuana retailers, producers, and processors could be in the Tukwila Valley South and heavy industrial zones, which are subject to, they could be in those zones subject to the buffer requirements of state law. And in 2017, the City Council revisited this zoning decision after receiving two separate requests but denied both and decided to leave the zoning as is. And as I mentioned, in 2019, the Finance Committee took this up and had a few discussions about it and looked at revenue potential and public safety concerns and decided at that time not to pursue a zoning change. A little bit about the marijuana excise tax. The state currently taxes marijuana at 37% at the time of the sale and distributes just a portion of that to cities, towns, and counties. There are two components to this tax. One is a per capita share to all jurisdictions that allow producers, processors, and retailers. And the second is a retail share to all jurisdictions where licensed retailers are physically located and active and in proportion to total statewide retail sales. So because Tukwila does allow producers, processors, and retailers, we do receive the per capita tax distribution, which was about $23,000 in both 2020 and 2019. Since we do not have active licensed retailers right now, that's where our portion of the tax ends. And it would be very difficult to predict how much we would receive from active retailers because the formula has so many variables. What we can do, as Councilmember Delestrinas Johnson mentioned the night she brought this up, is look at neighboring cities to get an idea. And so page 42 of your packet, I'm getting a notice that somebody's in the waiting room, so pardon me for just a second. It says a resident. Pardon my interruption. Well, I'm going to go on. I've clicked admit. So page 42 shows a table of the same cities we looked at last time, and I updated the memo to show how much they received in the state's 2020 fiscal year of July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2020. And I'm going to go back and see if I can resolve this. There we go.
I actually hit admit and it started to churn, so hopefully that will end here.
Okay, thank you. All right, so for example, Burien has two active businesses and received $111,000. I want to point out that if we had two active businesses, we couldn't assume a similar amount because population is a variable in the distribution. And finally, I've added an attachment, which is the updated info from MRSC on how the excise tax works. And with that, I will open it up to any questions.
All right. I will start with Kate this time.
I'm going to yield to Cynthia Delestrinas.
Thank you. So I have a couple questions. The first is, we're only allowed to have two licenses in Tukwila, and we already have, those two licenses are already assigned. So could we not, there couldn't be anybody else who gets a license?
That's correct. When I wrote this memo, I had gone to the state's website to see what the current status was, and I saw that one had been issued to somebody that's had the license for years. This is Mount Baker Retail Partnership, LLC. And then right now it says there's a license pending for Dash and Wrigley, LLC. And that was a different name than in 2019. It's still listed as pending with the state. And the addresses I listed in the memo are what they submitted. It's not necessarily where they were hoping to locate. And to answer your question, once the state issues licenses, that's it.
Because, I mean, the whole reason why this was brought up again to our attention was because there was a group, Black Excellence in Cannabis, that was interested in having a store in Tukwila, and it wasn't clear whether or not they were one of the two that has the licenses. Like, I don't know if you know the answer to that question.
I don't. I went to the, oh, My internet is faltering, so apologies if I'm cutting you or anybody off. I'm really sorry. I was hoping to answer that question for myself. That's why I turned to the state's database. So the two names are all I can go by. I don't know if Black Excellence in Cannabis is associated with one of those two. I would be happy to reach out to them.
I mean, because I think that would be, at least for me, that I would be interested in knowing, because if there really isn't anything that we could do there, like, I think this individual should know that because they reached out to us. They should know that, you know, there are only two licenses assigned to Tukwila and we don't, they're already taken. So at least that addresses that particular person's interest. And we sort of close the loop on that, because if it's not even possible for them, then we should at least let them know. So you mentioned that the two concerns the last time the council addressed it were weighing public safety concerns, and the potential for revenue didn't necessarily outweigh those public safety concerns at the time. What I'll say is, you know, we know now in the surrounding jurisdictions, and maybe this is something that I could, you know, follow up with the police chief about, but what I'm curious to know is whether those public safety concerns still exist, knowing that the surrounding cities around us have marijuana retail shops. And, you know, the question is, has there been concerns with public safety with those shops or not? I just, like, I would say it probably is not, and that my thought is that we as Tukwila are losing out on a potential source of revenue which could be used to support, you know, good community programs that actually address public safety head on, and that we think that the marijuana shops are going to increase, you know, I don't know, will decrease public safety in our community. We're actually losing out on an opportunity to receive revenue to actually create programs that we know can address public safety, if that makes sense. But it just doesn't make sense that we, as a central place in our region where a lot of people come to shop and, you know, I feel like we would receive revenue close to what Renton is getting, sort of on the higher end spectrum, because we're a pass-through city. Those are just my thoughts, but, you know, if I know that what this would require is us to open it back up and maybe look at zoning, but I don't know how others think. But I see Laurel. I don't know if you want to comment, but that's all.
Councilor Hogarty, can I just respond really quick, or would you rather go through? Regarding the public safety aspect, I would be happy to look to our PD and the state to see if we can get some updated information about the impacts to our neighboring cities. I do know that because they operate as a cash business, there is more potential. I mean, a lot of the issues that we were seeing was, you know, burglaries and robberies. So I would be, that hasn't changed. So we can certainly try to get some updated data there. And that's all I have for now. Thank you.
The one last thing that I forgot to mention is the potential of added jobs. And that's the other good thing that allowing these retail businesses is that it would also bring more jobs into our region. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Cynthia. Kate.
So I'm just looking for the facts. Thank you, legislative analyst Laurel Humphrey, for this information. There are a lot of regulations about where you can locate these shops. And I would like to know if any updates have been made to those at all. Go ahead, Laurel.
I can answer that. So the 1,000-foot buffer rule that was originally decided by the state is still in place, and that was buffer 1,000 feet from schools, parks, Arcades. I don't have the list in front of me, but it was a list of about 7 things. I looked at it today. And then in 2017, the state said, actually, cities can reduce that buffer from 1,000 feet to 100 feet for everything but parks and schools. And so that opened things up a little bit for the city. You would have to pass an ordinance stating all your reasons for doing so. So there, that was flexibility that changed.
Okay, I think that's something the council needs to know about. I also, you know, I was not in the meeting that Councilmember Del Strunz Johnson and Councilmember Don met, but the complaint was that there was a disadvantage for black businesses over other businesses, and I find great consternation over that. Is there a problem with the state process? I'd like information for the council on that. Is there a discriminatory process at the state level on selecting the applicants? Is first come, first serve their process? Are they worried or concerned about the diversity and equity aspect of this? That's concerning to me, because that's written into state law, not our law. And then I'd like to know if there's a waiting list. I'd like to know who's on that waiting list and how far back they are. And if it turns out that people of diverse populations are way at the back because of access problems, I think we take that to our 3 legislators, too sweet for the next session, and really jump on it. I am personally somewhat concerned, only through hearsay, because I was not in the meeting with Councilmember Dallas Dreams Johnson or Councilmember Dan, that the location, the business that has been named Black Excellence in Cannabis Desires, is not only far away from the area that we recommend, but is right at the on-off ramps for I-5, and right next to a bowling alley, which to me is a place where a lot of young people are not at home, they're not with their families, they don't meet the law, and have the potential to get involved in purchases. And so I would like that really well defined by the business, by the state, by the city, by any service calls we think that might cause. You know, it's a prime spot, and I think it's a great spot. If I was going to sell that stuff, that's where I'd want to be. I'm not knocking their smart marketing sense, but none of that's ever been offered by anybody who's in line. And the question is that line racist? If that line is racist, that's not Tukwila. And that means we need to have a conversation with the state and say, your line is racist. If that line is, we need to get as close to youth as we possibly can, we represent 20,000 people who may or may not be excited about that as a target. So I am open-minded, even though all the things I just said, I just want to know what the rules are, who's got a bib on and they're at the trough, who's farther down the line, who can comply with what we actually have, who doesn't want to comply with that and why, and maybe they have good reasons, and what does that mean to our youth. And I'm going to be responsible. We're a community. You jump off the freeway into Chloe and make your purchase and you go on to some other community. Do we have an obligation there? Legally speaking, do we have an obligation there? So all of those things are there. And I'm going to, because somebody's going to watch this thing from the community, say that I am definitely an advocate for changing the class of marijuana federally, but it has not changed, and every council member on this council swore to uphold federal laws and the Constitution. And I need to know what that impact is on these decisions as well, because I'm not going to go against my pledge. I am far more progressive than you think, but I am not going to break an oath of office while I do this. If that means we have to help the law change the classifications of this drug, then so be it. But if it means we're going to defy the law that we swore to uphold with our oath, we've got to have a really serious talk as a council. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. So I have a couple questions, and then I'll ask for, and then we can talk about moving forward. I want to confirm that we have existing zoning locations. We have two licenses already, and so our license, we've got two licenses, and we're allowed two licenses. It's just that I think they're holding on to them maybe for potential purposes. And a question that I have is, is there a limit of how long they can hold that license before they actually have to have a business? So that would be a question about those licenses. Maybe that just has never been an issue before, so there's no limit because it's just never come up before. So those for Dash and Wrigley and Mount Baker, how long can they hold those licenses? The next question would be, if this was, how many jobs would this generate in the community? And if we were to extrapolate the amount that Tukwila would get, what would that be? So I'm looking at, so it'd be like about $50,000 per store, so that'd be $100,000 a year, which is about what? $7,000 a month. Laurel?
So I would like to remind you that the formula factors in population. So you can't just say Burien's got two, they get 111,000. We would probably get 111,000, which if the market was the same. We've got a much smaller population, so our share of the excise is smaller. And again, I know that you really want definitive answers about how much revenue you could get, but MRSC, in fact, used to have a revenue estimator on their website, but they took it down because there's just there's no way to tell. There's so many variables.
Okay. All right. So we have a smaller population. So, okay. The next question that I have is about a potential, if we were to change the zoning. Could you talk about that process, Laurel, how that would work if we wanted to do a rezone, what's involved in that?
Sure. So it would be it's a pretty significant process to do a zoning change. It involves the planning commission. It involves a public hearing at the planning commission and the city council. I would think that this would generate a lot of interest from the community as it has in the past. So you may want to do a little bit more outreach. You're looking at several months. I know the Planning Commission has a full docket right now, and DCD staff is also at limited capacity. So that's really all I can say right now. It wouldn't be a quick zoning change.
Okay, or zoning consideration wouldn't happen quickly if we were to consider it. Okay. All right. So we have some questions that need to be answered. Kate, yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry, I forgot. I wrote a note that said 37% is a tax by the state, and then it distributes less than that to the cities. What is it, Laurel, is it a floating number, the amount they distribute to the cities, or is it consistent?
Yeah, it's $30 million.
I'm confused. If we do 37% tax to the state in Tukwila for the sales that we have, what percent does the state pass through to municipalities?
So that's what I was trying to say. Let me back up. The state keeps the vast majority of it. The percentage to the city is not as easy as saying we get 12% of that. It has to do with, let me look to my memo, sorry.
Percent
of that. It depends on population, marijuana retail sales as a proportion of total retail sales, and the number and total population of cities and counties that prohibit marijuana.
Okay, I'm gonna stay neutral on this. I'm thinking we need information. And when this came to this committee, it was to update the information that we had. Laurel, I think you did a good job of getting as close as you could, giving the questions and comments that we've had it might be helpful to make an informed decision even more. But I do know we were pretty reserved on how much we would spend staff time on this. So I'm in very supportive of the comments by other council members, possibly by myself, on getting a couple more tighter figures and presenting it for the council as soon as possible, because that's what we said we do in this committee. Thanks.
Okay. So Laurel, are you able to summarize the questions that you heard that that we're going to be looking into?
Yes, let me do that.
Okay, thank you.
I need to close my door. Okay, I heard kind of a refresh on public safety related impacts from neighboring cities. I heard to get information from the State Liquor and Cannabis Board on their licensing process, specifically how many, is there a waiting list, how long people can hold, individuals or companies can hold licenses, any, just more information, I would say. I heard the question, how many jobs would it bring to the community? I have to confess that that could be really difficult to answer. So my thought would be looking again to neighboring cities and see how many people their stores employ. And I heard Councilmember Proler mention a couple of things. One was that you said that the city council should know about the 1,000 to 100-foot buffer reduction. I just want to point out that the city council studied that extensively, because when the state made that change, you immediately, not immediately, but you shortly received two applications from people that wanted you to consider that change and to change your zoning, and both were denied at the time. So I just wanted to mention that so it's, you can check that one off. The other comment you made was about your duties to uphold the Constitution and federal law. You know, you allow retail, marijuana retail in your city already, and so I wasn't sure if you meant, should the city council look at revoking all of it? And is that a question for the city attorney?
So on both of these items, the list of people that are in line for these projects regarding sales or manufacturing or growth of marijuana, was the state process equitable? And it's not. That's our charge. We need to go take it back to them and go, it's not equitable. So that my understanding third hand, was the premise that this was brought to us, that it's racist. And if that's the case, I'm not excited about that. If there are people holding the options and it's not equitable, I'm really not excited about that. So that's where I want to go with that one. And then I wanted to make the comment that we make a pledge, an oath, when we enter office to uphold the Constitution and a number of things which involve following federal law. This stuff is not federally accepted. I know we got our state stuff going on, but I want to know where we stand so many years later. And do we try to reclassify this and make it more broad? Great. I don't know. Maybe the state guys did that same thing in a different way, and I don't know about it, but we made some pledges here, and so I don't want to be in conflict with what our oath is. Or do we need to change our oath? I don't know. But it is a conflict that is there, in my opinion. You know, again, I have a very progressive spirit, but I am constrained by our oath in certain ways. So I just want to make that crystal clear and say, are there pathways that the MRSC and others are trying to make for us because a legislator down in Olympia changed their mind? And then with the opening of the distance, it sounds like they've reduced the distances, to be informing the council to know that. And does that translate well when some of the sites that this particular company, and I only got it through hearsay, third hand, was to put themselves next to our bowling alley where there's a lot of youth and families down to very young in proximity to that location? So I've gone from here's what we allow to here's what we could allow. Things are changing, and then they've asked for a specific site that's incredibly advantageous, which I don't blame them. It's great marketing.
Sure. Sure. So
can we actually do that?
Bowling alleys aren't on the list, but arcades are, and there is an arcade at that end of the mall. So I'd have to, that again, the 1,000 foot to 100 foot reduction may allow for that. So that would be just an additional step you would have to take as a council to change the zoning for that.
Just need to know to make informed decisions. Like, that's all I'm asking for the rest of the council. Thanks.
Yep. Got it.
Okay, so we've got a list. Cynthia, did you have something else to say?
I thought your question about the limit to the two licenses and how long someone can hold them before, like, opening it back up, because if they're if they have two licenses and they haven't put a store in for how many years, like, should they still be allowed to hold those licenses in our city? I think that's an important question. And I think that was it. And maybe what Kathy, I really like Kathy's question about what would be the process for, expanding zoning or changing zoning? Because I think that information is important for the council to know when we bring this back. It's just like, it'll have to go through the zoning process, which requires, you know, planning commission, and it would take a long time. But I think it's important to know what the process would be if there was interest in moving forward.
All right, thank you. Laurel, did you have any further comments?
Just that I would be curious if you want to return to this committee with the additional information, or if you're ready to move it on.
Kate.
I have one more question. Could we just get a little map that shows all of the warehouses that are manufacturing, people who are distributing, and people who are actually stores around Tacoma? How big is the need?
Sure.
Because if they're right on our border and they're in Renton, if it's access to the options, that may or may not be something we want to deliberate on. If we've got plenty of access and it just happens to not be in Tacoma and they're right on the border, that's something that we should consider. Thanks.
Okay. So I think there's a lot of questions. My recommendation is that we keep this in committee. Do I have consensus on that?
I would support that this time around, because it'll possibly, I don't know the timing, because Zach's out for a little while, but I'd really like it to come back at some point where Zach gets to weigh in.
Yeah, that makes sense to me too. What do you think, Cynthia? Okay, so we're all in agreement on all these things, and we have a path moving forward. And so I will move on to the last item, which is usually whatever for the good of the order. Miscellaneous, is there any miscellaneous? All right, okay, then this meeting is adjourned, and and I do see we have a guest. If you have comments, there is a public comment period coming right up in the next meeting during that time. And Laura, do you have to pre-register for that public comment period?
Ideally, it's an email to city council. Well, if you're interested in making public comment, you can tell us now your intent. We'll get you on the list for the 7 o'clock meeting.
Okay, so I'm addressing, we have a resident who has signed in as resident. Are you interested in public comment? All right, I hear, so seeing, unless you're trying to unmute, seeing none, then we will adjourn this meeting, and I'll see you all.
Hey, Kathy, is there a way for that guest to unmute?
She should be able to. Let me just...
I just want to make sure we're not presenting barriers.
Yeah, it's not within my control to unmute.
I think she just showed us that she unmuted and muted. That's the nod. We're done.
Okay.
Okay, all right. Thank you. So we're all good. All right. Thank you. Okay. So I will see most of you at 7 o'clock then, and we are adjourned. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks all. Good night. See you next time.